Welcome to Beekeeping Today Podcast, presented by Bee Culture. Beekeeping Today Podcast is your source for beekeeping news, information, and entertainment. I'm Jeff Ott.
And I'm Kim Flatham.
Hey, Jeff and Kim. Today's sponsor is Global Patties. They're a family-operated business that manufactures protein supplement patties for honeybees. It's a good time to think about honeybee nutrition. Feeding your hive's protein supplement patties will ensure that they produce strong and healthy colonies by increasing brood production and overall honey flow. Now is a great time to consider what type of patty is right for your area and your honeybees. Global offers a variety of standard patties as well as custom patties to meet your needs. No matter where you are, Global is ready to serve you out of their manufacturing plants in Airdrie, Alberta, and in Butte, Montana, or from distribution depots across the continent. Visit them today at www.globalpatties.com.
You bet we want to thank Bee Culture Magazine for their continuing presenting sponsorship of this podcast. Bee Culture is the magazine for American beekeeping since 1873. Subscribe to Bee Culture today. And while you're there, check out Bee Culture's Beekeeping Your First 3 Years, a quarterly magazine for beginning beekeepers. We also want to thank 2 Million Blossoms as sponsor of this episode. 2 Million Blossoms is a new quarterly magazine dedicated to protecting all pollinator insects, both wild and managed, before they disappear. The magazine is full of beautiful photographs and informative articles from authors such as Dr. Marla Spivak, Dr. Mark Winston, and our very own Kim Flatham. Learn more on our Season 2, Episode 9 podcast with editor Kirsten Trainer from visiting www.2millionblossoms.com, and that's with the number 2. Kirsten, I'll figure out how to say your name one of these days. Hey, Kim, earlier this week we were able to talk with the Canadian writer-director of the award-winning film How to Bee, Naomi Mark. Sorry, Naomi. That was a good interview.
Yeah, it was. And I got to tell you, the weather where she is, she's in the Yukon, 40 below zero. That's 40 below Celsius or 40 below Fahrenheit. It's still 40 below. I'm amazed that people live there.
Unbelievable. I don't understand it either. All right. So, you know, it's end of January. All the big bee conferences are over. I know that we were busy doing podcasts and you didn't get to the conferences this year, but what have you heard?
Well, Kathy was there and Jerry, of course, Jerry was at both meetings, and I've talked to people that are at both meetings, and it doesn't surprise me, but it's surprising that one of the main topics of discussion at both meetings was adulterated honey. Wow. And the price of honey. And what people are doing to try and stay in business when you're competing against 60 cent a pound honey. So that hasn't gone away, and I hope it gets better. But boy, I tell you, it's got to be a tough way to make a living.
It definitely tough and hard coming out of the winter this time of year, coming out of the winter and dealing with the effects of the varroa too. So it just compounds on top of itself. Okay, well, let's get on with our conversation with Naomi from earlier this week. Just to give our listeners a fair warning that remember that Naomi's up in Whitehorse, Yukon territory. Now, that's way north of British Columbia even, and very cold, as Kim mentioned, at minus 40. So you may notice some sound quality problems, and you'll have to forgive us for that. It's a long ways away, and the phone lines are very cold. So with that... Well, let's get in with our discussion with Naomi. Hey, Naomi, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us on Beekeeping Today podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Hi, Naomi. This is Kim, and it's nice to meet you in person. I've watched your movie. I saw it this morning, and I'm astounded at the environment that you live in. Tell us about where this movie took place.
Absolutely. The movie, my place in the world, the Yukon Territory. I was born and raised in the Yukon, born in Whitehorse, which is the country, and then raised for a short while in a small town called Carmacks. But mostly my family sort of lived on the outskirts of the cities or in small towns. And so we grew up with very long winters and very short summers. So this means, you know, obviously, as you saw in the film, there's a lot of challenges to the environment, but, you know, you get the beauty of the space, but also dealing with those short summer seasons with a concentrated honey flow kind of in July. And then you have to deal with those long, cold winters, which are a challenge.
You're in Whitehorse, Yukon. For those of us who don't have immediate access to Google Maps, explain where Whitehorse, the Yukon, is.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Yukon is right above British Columbia in Canada, and we share a border with Alaska. And so we're inland. We can access the ocean. It's about like an hour and a half to Skagway, Alaska. So that kind of orients you a little bit. Yeah, the northern part of Canada.
If folks, listeners, want to look at a map, pause the podcast, check out where Whitehorse is. It is far north, let me tell you. Well, thank you. Yeah.
No worries. Yeah. So we've got those long summer days. We're not quite the Arctic, but we do have the long summer days. And then right now you've caught me in the midst of a very, very cold snap. And I actually don't know the conversion from Celsius to...
That's all right.
But it's minus 40, so 40 below, or it's been thereabout. And we've got the very, very short days now. So you can tell the light's coming back since, you know, the 21st, but it happens slowly.
Well, that's got to be a challenging place to learn how to keep bees. And that's what much of this movie is about, is sort of your journey from learning keeping bees. And you just said the temperature was minus 40. I can't imagine keeping bees warm in that kind of a temperature. And in the film, you did some wrapping. What was it you were wrapping them with?
Yeah, so about like October, you try to catch it right before an actual snowfall, but a lot of the time we'd be wrapping them in the snow. But so we use a vapor barrier. And then also usually about 1 or 2 inches of that kind of styrofoam insulation. But it's kind of varied over the years. My dad was one of the very first beekeepers who successfully kept bees in the north past winter, because, you know, back in the day there were more beekeepers sort of around the 50s and that kind of thing. But I think, as was the practice in a lot of places, they would, you know, kill the bees off at the end of the summer. And my dad was one of the first who actually was able to successfully winter his bees. But it really was a lot of trial and error as to what sort of materials were the best. And, you know, sometimes it'd be straw, sometimes it'd be that sort of that pink insulation stuff wrapped in bags. And, but in my time beekeeping with my dad, we had sort of landed on the vapor barrier with that thick, insulation. And then of course, one of the big things is having them properly ventilated, because, you know, even sometimes when you have the ventilation at the top and the bottom of the hive, you know, you want to let some of that moisture of the bees breathing out the top. And sometimes we put a layer of burlap or something to absorb that. But with these, you know, really intense temperatures plus the snowfall, you always have to be really mindful that that doesn't get iced over, which is something that I hadn't thought of before. So now I'm constantly going out to the hives and poking my finger in and just making sure there's, you know, still a hole and not just ice. So.
Well, your dad kept bees most of his life?
Yeah. So my dad first got bees in around 1982, I think was his very first hive. And I think it just stemmed from an interest in, you know, he was sort of living a self-sustaining lifestyle, and that he had like a little cabin and he trapped for a living and checked his traps with a dog team. And, you know, he was very much about creating his own food and making a living by himself sort of in the woods. And I think that beekeeping was a natural thing, you know, after the gardening and the trapping, and he was running a fish camp as well.
Wow.
It just made sense to go to beekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, he got his first hive, and then sort of had a couple hives on and off, but fairly consistently until I was a young child. And when I came along, he went to Beekeeper College in Fairview, Alberta. We started a 1-year program there. And then that was kind of the point where he became more of a commercial beekeeper. And that didn't last too long because, you know, the challenges of the winters here. And also he had a lot of issues with things like grizzly bears and black bears and even wolverines. 1 year, two wolverines got into the hives and things that he hadn't sort of anticipated. And so that kind of put a stop to things for a little while. And of course, our family was getting bigger at the time, and it just maybe wasn't as practical for him to have a large apiary. And so it kind of trickled out. And then in his retirement, he came back to beekeeping, which is when I kind of came into the picture, you know, having always sort of thought of my dad as a beekeeper and being proud of this sort of interesting hobby that he did and everybody associated him with. He's, you know, I'm sure that many beekeepers can empathize with the fact that, you know, as soon as you're getting into bees, the gift you get from everyone is something bee related. Like, I've got so much honey and candles and just bee things, which is lovely. But that was my dad. It was like every year his birthday cake had a honeybee on it, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'd always associated him with that. And then when he started beekeeping again, as he was getting sick, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity for me to be a part of that part of his life, and to not only learn something from him, but learn something for myself that I'd always also been curious about, and just get to spend more time with him.
Having watched the movie and your, I'll use the word again, your journey learning to keep bees, the one thing I noticed really obvious was he had a good background, and you mentioned the college, and that shows. The advice that he gave you was good, solid bee biology, good, solid beekeeping management. He knew what he was doing, and he passed that along. And I hope you picked it up, because he really knew what he was doing. And people listening to this movie are going to learn something just because of how he explained it to you, I think. That's not a question. I appreciate that. But one of the things I wanted to get across was that message is that, so what we don't see in the movie is how many questions were you asking him off screen?
Yeah, that's the hard part, is that, you know, I started this film from a place of honestly feeling like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could film the process of just learning to beekeep and all the little things that you learn? But it was too much. You know, I asked a million questions. I asked so many questions. and it just became, you know, it turned into a different story. So it became more about documenting our relationship where, you know, with the things that were changing in our lives and how it sort of connects to the beekeeping. But yeah, it's actually really nice to hear that you feel like that came through, because I honestly, sometimes I get nervous when I screen the film and I think there's going to be a lot of beekeepers there, and I think, oh, what if I learned it wrong? You know, what if this isn't how people normally do it? Because I sort of took the approach that when I first started was I didn't really want to learn beekeeping from a book. And so I told my dad I had read this book that he gave me, but I didn't read the book. I really wanted to just sort of learn from seeing and experiencing and hearing and smelling and really getting to be really tactile with the bees. Cause to me, that's what the project was really about, was actually, you know, having that hands-on experience with someone who knows. And I don't think that a lot of people get to learn to beekeep that way. So it feels like it was, you know, an amazing privilege to be able to do it that way. But that being said, I'm not that person that's reading all the bee books, because I really relied on my dad's information and what he was telling me. And, you know, at a certain point around the third year of beekeeping, it'd be like, I would notice something and maybe I'd look it up in a book. But for the most part, it was really sort of trusting my dad's experience and what he'd learned.
Tell us about your movie and the genesis of it and the movie and why you did that.
Yeah, so at the time I was living in, I started the film in 2015. And before that point, I had been living in Vancouver, where I went to school for film school. And I was very much focused on, you know, try and make films, which if anybody knows anything about filmmaking, it's really hard. It's really hard to find the financing, to find the teams, and to really make things happen. It takes a long time. So it felt for a while like I was kind of pushing water uphill. I forget what had happened exactly, but I think I'd finished a job and I had this summer that felt like it was really free. And my dad, I think he'd ordered a couple new hives. He'd been keeping bees. And the previous summer I had been up to visit him and my mom, and dad had asked me, "Hey, Naomi, do you want to, let me move bees tonight?" And I was like, "Why do we have to wait to nighttime to move the bees? That's so weird." He's like, "Yeah, like just come over at like 11 o'clock and hives." Okay. So I met my dad at 11 o'clock and it wasn't quite dark enough yet or cold enough yet. So the bees were still flying. And so we waited another hour and I went out to move the bees, and it just felt like this sort of weird and strange magical adventure. this guy would be still bright out at that time, so just dark enough that the bees had sort of started flying, but sort of that dusky blue color. And we drove out and picked up these bees, and my dad had, you know, planned to move the bees physically himself, but by the time we'd like walked up to the hive, he was sort of puffed out. And for those who haven't seen the movie, he was suffering with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is a lung disease, degenerative lung disease. And so that just means that your lungs continually decrease their capacity until they can no longer sustain you. And so he was very early in his disease at that point, but he couldn't, you know, walk very far. And so he told me he was going to be moving this hive. And I said, "No, Dad, like I'll lift the hive. It's fine. I'll do it." He's like, "Oh, it's very heavy, Naomi. You really can't drop it, right?" But I was like, no, I'm going to do it. So we, you know, plucked up the entrance and I picked up the hive, and I had no idea that, you know, these, you know, beehive doesn't look huge, but two supers that are basically the brood chambers can be quite heavy, especially if it's partway through the season. And so I picked up this hive and I struggled, but I finally, like, you know, I got them into the truck, and by the time I got them into the truck, I, you know, moved the entrance, and there were bees flying, and I had a bee in my hair, and I like just was freaking out this bee in my hair. And I finally got it out, and I'm like, I don't forget what he kind of advised to get this bee out of my hair. It was probably calm down. They can't really do much because they're in your, I can't see. But anyway, in the end of it all, I got one sting on my hip. But at the time it just really felt like I had just gone on an adventure with my dad, and he'd invited me into his world, and I'd learned so much. I learned that, you know, you've got to move bees at night when they're not out flying because they can't see in the dark. And, you know, I just learned a ton. I learned how to get a bee sting out of myself without squeezing more venom in. And it just felt like this really beautiful, rich experience. And so flash forward a year later, and things are calming down in Vancouver in the film world, and just finished a job. And I called my dad and just said, "Hey, Dad, do you think you would need, you know, more help with the bees this summer? I'm thinking I might come home, and maybe I could film it, and we could take care of the bees together this summer." And he said, "Yes, but you can't ask any stupid questions. So you have to read this book that I'm going to send you." And so he sent me the book, and I didn't really look at it, but yeah, then I, you know, road tripped home up north. It took two days in a car to get home. And wow. And then we started our beekeeping adventure, and I didn't know like what it was going to turn into in the beginning. I really thought it would be sort of a how-to on beekeeping is experienced in like a first person way where you get to sort of learn with me. But then it just turned into a whole lot more than that. Yeah.
Well, one of the observations I made, and I did this intentionally, I watched you learn, and early on lighting a smoker. That was interesting in the beginning. And at the end of the film, you were just like every 20-year beekeeper I know. It was just it was second nature, lighting a smoker, keeping it lit, those sorts of things. So you picked up the skills in the course of this. Your dad did a good job of teaching you those skills. I would guess that there was a lot behind the scenes and off camera where he was saying, "No, don't do it that way." because it showed that you were constantly improving. How many bees do you have? Do you still have bees? There's the question.
I do still have bees. It's sort of last summer was somewhat of a, not dormant. I mean, last summer I was in Australia with my husband. His mother was ill at the time. And so we were there to sort of support the family. And so my mom actually took care of my bees. I only have one hive at the moment. But she spent the summer with them. And, you know, throughout the course of making the film, she also learned a ton about beekeeping. And so a lot of my summer this summer was spent sort of on Skype with my mom, with my sister holding showing me what they're doing. And I'm trying to help her, you know, make sure that she's identifying what's happening correctly and that I can identify it through through the computer. So that was a big experiment. She ended up having to requeen the hive at the end of the summer, which was a little bit stressful for me, but I think she did all right. The bees seem like they're fine now. I mean, it's hard to tell. It's winter. We don't have any of the internal monitoring for our hive, so it's really hard to tell what's going on, but it seems like there's some warmth coming out of the hive. So, yeah, fingers crossed they make it through. And then this summer, I'm really hoping to build a little bit, and I'd like to maintain sort of a hobby apiary of four hives. That was kind of the recommendation that my dad always, he always encouraged me that we had four, just so that there's, you know, time to sort of, or there are options for management. It's a bit difficult up north because if you go queenless at the wrong part of the year, no one raises queens here, and you've got to have it shipped up, you know, from either Saskatchewan, like basically southern Canada. Mm-hmm. And it takes ages, but it's really entertaining. I don't know if your bees come like this, but our queens will literally come just in a Canada Post package and into the post office, and so you'll come to pick up your bees, and the postal workers are all very very excited by the buzzing package. So
when ours used to come, the packages and the queens would come to our post office. The post office people were very glad when you came to get them, yeah. to get them out of the back of the post office. And sometimes they kept them outside, which was usually not good for the bees. Yeah. But that's kind of interesting that your mom learned to keep bees from you, sort of long distance, and you learned. So your dad's legacy moved down a generation and then back up a generation. That's kind of a neat story to tell.
Yeah. It's been really nice actually to be able to share that stuff with my mom. Because it is a way that we feel closer with my dad, you know, getting like practicing beekeeping and spending time with bees. It's, you know, it was so much, it was something that he was so passionate about that you can't help but feel close when you spend time observing and watching the bees. And so that's been really, it's been a really nice thing for her in the last couple of years a big hurdle was for her was sort of getting over her fear of them first. And then she's been losing the anxiety kind of worse because I left my bees with her. But as she's been losing that anxiety, she's really been learning to really love it and to sort of understand the thing that I always say, which is that beekeeping feels really, you know, meditative. It's something that's good for your soul. Like, you know, having to slow down to the point, partially because you're maybe afraid of what could happen if you didn't slow down, but slowing down to the pace of bees to me is such a nourishing thing for your soul to just take that time. And also I find being so in sync with the weather as well and what's going on in nature, it's so easy to sort of get caught up with the rest of your life. But then, you know, when I switch into the beekeeping mode, which I think my mom was learning this summer, it's, you get to really enjoy the fact that it's beautiful and sunny out because you're out with the bees and things are quieter and slower and listening to the birds and watching the way the bees are, you know, what they're doing that day, what they're bringing in, what color the pollen is. And yeah, I think it's just such a beautiful thing. And it's just really nice to have been able to share it with my dad and now to share it with my mom. And yeah, my siblings are all really interested as well, but it just takes a bit of time to really get into it. So Yeah.
In the movie, you had, I think your sister was also helping with loading the bees and everything. And I was amazed that she was barefooted in the movie. I know you were in sandals. Somebody was in sandals and somebody else was barefoot. And it's just like, well, that's fun.
Yeah. So our bees were partly, they were in our front yard at my parents' house. And my siblings all sort of come and go throughout the summer. We live in different places. And then we had where we were taking them to forage. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word. It's about a half hour drive away. But yeah, beekeeping, it becomes really casual when it's sort of like just in your front yard. So, and with my siblings all kind of growing up, at least for most of us, growing up with the bees, we sort of, I think are desensitized to the potential danger, though, of course we've all stepped on bees and had, a ton of stings and that kind of thing.
Easy to look at were some of the fields of fireweed that you show. Fireweed, you have lots of it. I have none of it. And I'm jealous of both the honey that it makes, but how long does the fireweed flow last and how much can you make on it?
It really depends, because fireweed comes, after a forest fire. It also grows after the land has maybe been disturbed by something. So if you've been digging or, got a driveway plowed and it kind of moves the earth around a bit, you're going to get some fireweed popping up. And then the bigger one is post-forest fire. So when my dad was keeping bees in the early 90s, he would actually move his bees to follow the fireweed. And so there'd be a big fire, and he worked in wildland fires sometimes. So he'd figure out which one was, sort of accessible and where there'd be a place to put a trailer of bees and literally bring them to the fireweed. And so there are a couple of apiaries in Whitehorse who had property. The people who own the apiaries had property that was near recent burns. And so the problem with that is that, yes, you'll have a crazy, season for a couple of seasons, but eventually the fireweed stops coming once the ground is reestablished with nutrients and stuff, and the fireweed will no longer stay. So it usually lasts about 5 years or so. And the actual honey flow is between sort of like early, the blooms start to happen in July-ish, end of June, early July, and then the honey flow will be July through to mid-August or so. Yeah, so it's pretty consistent and solid. But the problem really remains is that it's not, you don't get to keep it forever. So one of the most successful apiaries in town in my region, they were in the Fox Lake area, and there was a huge burn there, just massive. I remember because I think it happened in 1995. Don't quote me on the year, but I remember I was going to kids camp that year, and we couldn't go because we had to drive through the highway, and the highway went right through where this burn was, and it was on both sides of the highway, and it was just massive. But friends of ours had a property there, and they profited off that fireweed burn for, I think five, six years, but now it's kind of tapered out. And so they still keep bees, but it's not the same as it used to be. It's unpredictable that way. And there is, it's predictable, but I think some people don't realize it's not going to last forever.
Does it also come up after they've been logging, done any logging? Does that tear it up enough?
Yeah, that can happen as well. So it's whenever the ground is significantly disturbed, is the way that my dad would put it. So that's another thing is you can't really plan. And I don't know. I don't know that you can recreate the exact circumstances where the fireweed will flourish. But I'm guessing it's pretty difficult. Otherwise, people would probably try and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think like when my dad was doing it, the following the fireweed was, you know, I mean, I think that he was prone to exaggerating a little bit, but, you know, he would say he would just get hundreds and hundreds of pounds off of one hive and that he couldn't keep track of, like he couldn't keep up with the honey flow. And there's photos, I think you see them in the film where he's got like, I don't know, like five super honey supers stacked on top of the main chamber. And he said he just couldn't even handle the amount of honey that he was getting. And at that time, I mean, my mom would come into the beekeeping more because she was the one who would do, you know, the labeling and the jarring and stuff. My dad just wanted to just dump it into pails and sell pails and buckets because he just didn't want to deal with the quantity of it. And I don't know how much of that is exaggeration, but I'm sure it's partly true.
What other blooms do you have coming up other than the fireweed? Do you have?
There's a large mix of wildflowers, but that's sort of the problem in the Yukon. And it's sort of, I've kind of in the last couple of years sort of weighed out whether or not I'd want to sort of try and become a commercial beekeeper, because there have been years where I've sold honey and it goes really well and people really want, you know, local Yukon wildflower honey, but the flowers aren't really that consistent. Outside of a mix of different wildflowers, the fireweed is really the most consistent thing. Some beekeepers in the Whitehorse area operate near Hascap farms. Hascap is a type of berry that's sort of similar to a blueberry, but more like an oblong berry. Hmm. It's a bit more tart. And I believe, they bloom in June. So it's a little bit earlier than the fireweed blooms. But I don't know, like I haven't tasted Hascap honey, but I've heard that people in town are doing it. And then outside of that, there's a couple farms that do mustard flowers. And so that's a big crop that is, you know, when it's irrigated is you're going to get a pretty decent honey flow off of that. And, and that's kind of what my dad was relying on in his retirement, you know, I think to pass the point of wanting to move bees to follow the fireweed, which can be crazy because he was driving huge distances to go check his hives. But so we put our hives near the mustard fields, and that was, you know, we got honey every year in reasonable quantities from, you know, 60 pounds to 100 pounds a hive, which was pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, but then the wildflower honey is delicious and amazing, but it's just less consistent.
You showed some of the you said mustard canola fields. So I was thinking that must be some of your crop anyway.
Yeah, that was a lot of it. I mean, some summers we would do two harvests, and where we had the bees, there was a significant amount of wildflowers. And so we'd do like a wildflower harvest and then it'd be a mustard harvest. And I personally prefer the wildflower because it doesn't crystallize as quickly. And the mustard is really, it crystallizes.
Yeah. Yes.
Like almost as you're putting it into the jar, yeah. Which is frustrating, but it still tastes good.
Did you keep a bear fence around your hives in your front yard? You spent a lot of time building bear fences in your movie.
Yeah, well, it takes place over 3 years, so we do it, I think we do it three times probably, which probably felt like a lot in an 82-minute film. But yeah, it's a pretty minimal bear fence from what other people in the territory use, and that's mostly because our bees were on a property that was occupied by a family, and so there was someone keeping an eye on the hives, and then we would have an electric fence it was operated off of a car battery, and then we'd sometimes use a bear alarm, a pest alarm, you know, just a motion sensored alarm. But you know, when you have your hives out in sort of more remote areas of the Yukon, it's really important to have a little bit more of a heavy duty fence, having a physical barrier as well as the electric, I think, is really important. My dad, as I mentioned before, has lost at least, I think he's probably lost hives at least three times. But you hear stories where, you know, your entire apiary is just devastated because a bee gets in there and knocks a couple things apart, maybe eats a little bit of the brood and then leaves. And then you come to check it a couple days later and you're, you know, maybe your, all your brood is chilled.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're definitely a pest.
The wolverine sounds, I've not heard about wolverine attacks on an apiary. So that's, how can you distinguish the mess that a bear leaves versus a wolverine makes?
Well, a wolverine is very clean and likes to eat in private. So what my dad found when the wolverine had attacked the hives is that it literally went in there. Like, it, you know, they're small animals, so it could just go under the electric fence, got in there and popped open the hive, and then was taking individual frames out and then carrying them off into the bush, eating them, and then going back and getting another one. So he was literally back and forth, taking apart the hive one frame at a time.
That's actually a pretty smart way to do it.
Yeah.
It's not funny, but it's funny. It's.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, my dad wasn't very pleased. He trapped one of them at least.
Well, they go a ways away, and they sit, and the bees that are defending the hive stay by the hive, so they're not bothering the wolverine. That's a smart animal.
That is it. I didn't actually think about it that way, but obviously that's what's happening, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, your movie is called How to Bee, and it follows the three summers with your dad and learning about beekeeping. How has the reception been for the movie? How are the screenings going? It's up in Canada now, and it's being released in the States, I think, on the 29th, if I remember right.
Yeah, we just had a big round of theatrical screenings through Demand Films in Canada, and that was on January 6th. And then in the U.S., it'll be January 29th is the majority of them, but then there are a few on a couple other dates. But yeah, I had the pleasure of going to a couple of festivals with the film and getting to actually sit with the audience and do a Q&A afterwards. And for the most part, it's been really, really positive. For me, it's quite a, you know, personal and emotional film. So I'm always really happy if afterwards I find that the audience is largely beekeepers, because the questions tend to be technical and about bees and about, you know, wintering bees in the north. And I always love sort of talking about bees that way. And then also I find, you know, people are very touched by the personal story of the film. But overall it's been really great. Yeah. We've screened in, well, in our theatrical run, we did 14 cities in Canada. And then we've done a few festivals throughout the country, including Toronto, Vancouver. Our only American date so far before the theatrical was in Rhode Island, where we actually won two awards, one for best documentary film and the other for, it was the Marilyn Mason Award for a new female voices. So, yeah, so that's been really cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So those kinds of things are really, really neat. And I can't help but think my dad would find it, I don't know if he'd find it funny or amazing that his beekeeping is getting spread around North America and the world a little bit. So
I imagine that the reception's been really good. I'm the beekeepers and you know, right, and your dad having been probably a good example, very stoic and very stoic. And to be able to go into a movie theater and watch the relationship between the beekeeper father and the daughter, it probably touched a lot more people, many more beekeepers than you were made aware of. You know, I'm sure that appreciated in silence, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, and I have, I didn't mention that really, but it's like, I've been getting messages on Facebook through our page, the How to Be Film page. And then also people that just find me on Facebook and shoot me messages saying, oh, I just saw the trailer of your film and, you know, my dad taught me how to beekeep, yeah. Or, you know, I'm working with my nieces and I'm teaching them to beekeep. And there is something really special, I think, about that part of it, the family beekeeping angle. And And I think that part of that is because beekeeping is such a magical and strange sort of, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say hobby, but it's a magical relationship with our environment, mm-hmm. you know, getting to be that close with such an incredible organism as a beehive.
I think your dad was lucky that you came back.
Thank you.
Because often that doesn't happen. Children mature, they grow up, they go away. You came back and he was able to share what he knew because he wasn't able to share much when you were younger. So that was special to see that relationship rekindled, more or less. I enjoyed seeing that.
Thank you. Yeah, that was, I mean, I think that in the end was the most important part for me, was really, you know, the relationship. I think my dad had sort of written me off. In my mind, my dad had written me off as a city girl. So it was also me proving him wrong. Oh, I forgot to mention too, in terms of the way the reactions I was a little bit nervous to come on this podcast, just because I've had some people get really excited about the film and, you know, how to be, it's about beekeeping, it's about bees in the North. It's, you know, going to be really interesting. And I think some people sort of expect it to be a little bit more of a technical film that's really talking about what's going on with bees, you know, which is not what the film is. And so I wasn't sure what your reaction would be to that, because recently I did a screening in Whitehorse and I was sitting outside, I think waiting. I've watched the film many times and I like to watch it with the audience, but this time I was sitting outside and someone came out and they were so angry and they just yelled, like, "This was supposed to be about bees. It's not about bees." And left the theater. I wasn't sure what your reaction would be.
Well, we will have links in our show notes to your How to Bee website, to your Facebook page for How to Bee, and to, do you do Twitter? We'll put everything up there in the show notes.
Oh, great.
So people can reach out and see the movie. And also we'll put the Demand Films link so that folks want to see the movie when it's released down here, starting the 29th, they can find a theater and or reach out to Demand Films to request a viewing in their town.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
You bet. Naomi, Mark, we really enjoyed your movie. We encourage our listeners to look it up, go to the show notes, find a showing near you. And if you're in Canada, you can, it'll be broadcast. And it's a fabulous film. Nicely done.
Thank you.
You had a distinct advantage with the photography in that the environment you live in was stunning. I mean, there's just aim a camera and it's beautiful. You didn't have to...
It's true. We're very, very lucky. And that's another reason I'm so happy that, you know, this project and beekeeping brought me home, because now I'm here and I married my cinematographer. So,
but it's very good. Minus 40 something outside where you are right now, right?
Yeah, it is very cold. It's the kind of cold where you have to run your vehicle for a good 30 minutes before you want to drive it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, I hope you enjoy it. I'll watch from here.
All right, I'll try and bottle up some minus 40 and send it your way.
No, you can keep it there. Thank you. All right, Naomi, I appreciate you being on the podcast today, and good luck with your movie. And I look forward to hearing other great things from you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Nice meeting both of you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
This has been fun, Naomi. It was nice to meet you and your dad.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that was a really good interview with Naomi. I really liked it. As a father and as a beekeeper, it was very touching. Very touching movie and very
It was.
Good story.
And it was nice to get to know her on a different level than the movie. The movie was good. I mean, she was good in the movie, but talking to her about the movie, talking to her about her dad and learning to keep bees, being taught by her dad, it's a good story. And it's fun to watch, and I hope people take advantage of getting to know her, her dad, and her story.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to encourage listeners to check out her film, How to Bee. The link is in our show notes, but it's HOWTOBEE.CA. And that's CanadianWebsite.ca. And check out the film. And also want to let listeners know that her film is viewing in the United States beginning January 29th. And you can go out to Demand Films to find a location near you where it will be showed. Where it will be showing. And also check those notes.
I think she mentioned it was going to be available on the internet, at least in Canada.
Yeah.
Sometime soon. So pay attention to that too. If getting to one of her previews is tough because it's too far away or whatever, so you might be able to catch it at home.
Well, that about wraps it up for this podcast. Before we go, I want to encourage our listeners to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, wherever you download and stream the show. Your vote helps other beekeepers find us quicker. And we want to thank this episode's sponsor, Global Patties. Check them out at www.globalpatties.com. And while you're there, give them a shout out for sponsoring this episode. And finally, we want to thank you, the Beekeeping Today podcast listener, for joining us on this show. Feel free to send us questions and comments at questions@beekeepingtodaypodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Anything else, Kim?
I think that about wraps it up, Jeff. It was a good show. Good day, and stay warm.
I will. I feel after talking to Naomi, I'm going to go turn up the heat in the house and enjoy the warmth. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.